Must be Dave, the batteries are dead, so here we go. And that's a problem for Dave because he's trying to record it. So if he can't hear me, there won't be a recording. It's not that I couldn't make myself heard, perhaps. Thinking about current events, quite a week if you watch the news, Scotland decided not to choose independence but to stay a member of the United Kingdom, to remain part of Great Britain. You look at what's happening with ISIL. I'm not sure. Every day seems to be another story, but I understand a tremendous number of refugees are fleeing into Turkey now because villages in Syria are being overrun by the troops of ISIL. And you look at our own country and you think about what's happening here in Ferguson, Missouri, and in the various cities of our country and our land. Do you ever wonder to yourself, what in the world is going on? You try to make sense of events, current events. Try to figure out from within history what it means and what's the significance of things happening around us and where is it all headed? Where will things be 5, 10, 15, or 50 years from now? Where are things headed? Sometimes I think we wonder about those things, and I believe that without help from above, without a divine perspective, without God speaking to us, from the midst of history, from within history, we're not really going to understand what's taking place here, what it means, and what's going on. Say the word Shemitah. Shemitah. Anybody know what it means? Let me see if I can help you understand what it means. Here are three possible meanings and readings and maybe a couple more thrown in as well. It can mean, Shemitah, it can mean the release, it can mean the remission, and it can mean the letting rest. We just heard that word rest, didn't we? Or letting go. Letting rest, letting fall, letting go. Shemitah. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about Shemitah. But before I tell you more about where we can discover what Shemitah is and what it means, let me simply say this. Shemitah offers us a choice, you and I. It's a daily choice that we make and others make throughout history. Nations make it too. We can either rest in God or we can experience the arrest of God. Did you hear me? We can either experience the rest of God or we experience the arrest of God when God gets hold of us. Either we seek God or God will come after us. Either we choose to seek after God because of the mercy and the grace that he offers us, or the grace of God will pursue us and it might be experienced as a rather severe mercy. All I can tell you is this, that God will get what God wants. And if you don't give it to him willingly, then God will take what he wants. Let me explain what I mean. Here we go. I think I'm going to take this off, Dave, and maybe we'll replace, maybe you can put batteries as we go. Let me hand this over to Dave. Craig, let me just give this to you. Thank you. So I want to take you then to Deuteronomy chapter 15. When was the last time you all read Deuteronomy? Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, here we go. Deuteronomy 15. We're going to look at the first two verses in particular and the first six to provide some context here as we listen for the word of God. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. And this is the manner of remission or release. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. From a foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever of yours is with your brother. However, there shall be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess, if only you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all this command which I am commanding you today. For the Lord your God shall bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow. What's the story of our nation? I think we know the answer to that. And you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. For release. You see, God issued a command to Israel, and what he said was that every 7 years the people were to rest, and every seventh year was to be a Sabbath year, or the Shemitah. And it had everything to do with relations, did the Sabbath year and the Shemitah, the relations between neighbors. Now remember, we're talking about the nation of Israel here. So we're talking about sisters and brothers. And Shemitah had to do with relations between those who lived side by side with their neighbors. It especially had to do with how the stronger might be enabled to help the weaker in their community, especially with regard to slavery and debts. It was all about economic relationships and the economy of ancient Israel. Now, perhaps as you listen to the passage, it might have surprised you, but I'm sure you heard it there, that in Israel, you could loan money to a foreigner at interest. So as a Gentile, money could be loaned to us for interest. But amongst the Israelites, if I were to loan Craig some money, could I charge him interest? No, we're not permitted to do that. That was outlawed or proscribed. You weren't supposed to do that. Why? Because this is my brother. He's an Israelite. We are all God's people, God's holy and chosen people, so we don't treat one another that way. We offer a loan to help somebody through a crisis, but without interest. So I think all of us are familiar with the 7-day cycle. It goes all the way back to creation, 6 days to work and 1 day of rest that we call the Sabbath, a day of rest, not from our labors, but maybe to enter in perhaps to the rest of God, and the rest of what God has for us. And so it goes all the way back to Genesis, this concept does, when God rested on the seventh day. 6 days he labored, 6 days did God work to create all of this for us. And on the seventh day, God entered into his rest. So Sunday, or Sabbath, is also known as, because this same cycle also is applied to years, not just to the days of the week, but here you again have that holy number 7 applied to the cycle of years. So what does that mean? Well, for 6 years you work, and what do you do in the 7th year? You rest. What does that mean? Well, I think there's still a holdover of that, and you can certainly see that on college campuses and with churches as well. And if a professor teaches for 6 years, at least 6 years, that professor may then be eligible for a sabbatical leave or a sabbatical year. And same thing, often churches often do the same things for pastors. After working 6 years or more, then you become eligible for a sabbatical year, a time of rest. There was also one other time cycle that we need to look at in Israel, and this was a 50-year cycle, or 49-year, and then the 50th year was called the year of Jubilee. That's right. So it was a 49-year cycle. So it came to the Jubilee at the end of, it was the climax of 7 years of 7. You see the holy number 7 replicated once again. All I can tell you is that every time you see 7, it's significant. I think we know that. It's meaningful in the eyes of God. So let those who have ears to hear be wise and register what God is trying to say and convey. Every 7 years in Israel, their religious practices, according to the law, absolutely turned the social life upside down and inside out. And there were 3 major shakeups. The first had to do with land, with property, the very soil, the land beneath our feet. And on the 7th year, the land was to be given a vacation. Crops were not to be planted or harvested in the 7th year. It was an agricultural economy in ancient Israel. And so if there were volunteers that came up, I think most of us, we lose a few seeds that and something may pop up the next year. That was okay, but those were to be harvested by the poor, those who actually needed what grew there. If you had volunteers coming up, those were for the poor and not for the landowner. The Lord promised then in the 6th year that during that 6th year of harvest, the land would become extremely profitable, bountiful, and abundant. There would be enough to tide the people over through the 7th year when they let the land lie fallow. So the 6th year would also always produce a bumper harvest, bumper crops, so they could get through and let the land take a vacation for 1 year. So as the people rested on the seventh day, so even the land itself was given the opportunity to rest, to lie fallow. And so I want to tell you, it was just interesting. This week I happened to read, and I just stumbled across it, although I don't think there are coincidences. So I was reading about something that happened in Israel, and there was a secular farmer, and his name was Gabor, and he decided that he would observe the Shemitah, the sabbatical year. And he had never done this before, so he approached an organization that helps farmers in Israel do this and facilitate this possibility. And they allowed him to register for their program, but they asked him to do one further thing. They said, if you're going to, as a farmer, keep Shemitah, we would also like you in your personal life to do the same, to keep the Sabbath with God. And so he agreed to do that. And so then in Israel, there's a rabbinic court, and they made the decision then to cover his farming expenses so that all the produce that would then be produced that year, it would be distributed in full accordance with Jewish law. Well, what happened was there was a cold snap that appeared in Israel. It lasted 2 to 3 weeks. It was severe and profound. And this particular farmer lived some distance from his land, so he was very much concerned at what was happening. He heard other farmers, people that he knew, talking about how devastating the cold snap and the frost had been. If you've ever tried to, you ever had a banana and you put it in the refrigerator, what happens to it? Doesn't look so good, does it? It kind of turns brown and gets hard and yucky. Well, you lose your crop and you can't sell them that way. So he was hearing from other farmers that they had lost their complete crops. Everything was ruined. So he was a little bit disheartened by what he had heard. So he drove out to his land in Tiberia, the northern part of Israel. And when he got there, he was just dumbstruck and shocked. All of his bananas were yellow and green. Everybody around him, brown, the crops ruined, and even some of the trees were dying. But not a single tree of his had been struck by the frost. So he called up the court, those who had helped to sponsor him, and he said, "You're not going to believe it, but there's been a miracle, an absolute miracle." So what do you do with that? He viewed it, and so today, as a manifestation, a modern-day manifestation of God's blessing, back to the old prescriptions and the very blessing of the Mosaic Law. "I will ordain my blessing for you in the sixth year." How can you say, except that God, what do you do with that? Except that God keeps his promises to those who keep covenant with him. Here was a man who trusted, made the effort, and was met with a reward and a blessing by God. So the first part of the change has to do with what we do with the land. The other thing that gets reversed in that sabbatical year, Shemitah, is that slaves are to be released. How did you become a slave in ancient Israel? Well, if you had a bad harvest, perhaps you broke your leg and you couldn't get out and work your fields and couldn't get anybody to help you adequately. So you might have a debt, and so you could become an indentured servant, a slave. And typically that's how it happened, some economic failure or crop failure, so that people owed money and couldn't pay their debts. And so whether it was ever really practiced on a very significant or widespread level is unclear. But the principle existed, and this is what God said that he wanted for the economics of his people. So that in that seventh year, if you had lost, if you were indebted and had to work as a slave to work off your debt, you would be set free in that seventh year. And the third part goes right along with that. It had to do with debt. Debts were to be erased in the seventh year. And I'm not talking about commercial loans here. What Israel was talking about was charitable loans. Oh my goodness, my crop didn't come out so well. I'm short. Craig, as my brother, could you loan me some money? I'll pay you back next year when there's a better harvest. So no interest was to be charged. It's just, if you give me $300, I'll give you back $300 next year when the opportunity returns. And this was so that there would be no one poor in Israel. Did you catch that? In the verses that I read, so that no one in Israel would be poor. Let me say that again. So that no one would be poor. How many poor people live in this country? The poverty rate in this nation is above 12%. In Israel, though, there wasn't supposed to be anyone who was poor. You see, this is the economy of God, so that no one would be poor. What's that seventh year Shemitah all about? Well, in a word, and I would summarize it this way, reset. Reset. It's a complete resetting. There's a complete turnover. Things were turned upside down and inside out and went back to zero. So you think about this, and I just want to say, this was the economy of God. What do you think? Crazy. Some people are like, yeah, I like that. How would it be if your debts were forgiven after 6 years in that seventh year? Yeah, I signed up for that. That sounds great to me. Well, that was the arrangement that God had. The order of things in the household of Israel. And then there was also a fourth inversion that happened as well. And this time it had to do with the 50th year, the year of Jubilee. And on this occasion, land itself was to be restored to the original occupants who owned it at the beginning of the Jubilee. And this dates all the way back to the time when the tribes of Israel settled into the promised land. Go back to Leviticus 25, verse 10. I want you to know where you can go and look later in case you do. And this prevented anyone from permanently controlling access to the land at the expense of the poor. And so the year of Jubilee was supposed to be a great equalizer. It was supposed to restore economic opportunity to those who may have lost the land, and it was supposed to come around once in every generation. And actually, between those 50 years, as you might suspect, you didn't actually own the land. All you did was lease the land for your use. And as you got closer to the year of Jubilee, no surprise here, the value of the land began to drop according to the number of harvests that were left between that particular year and the year of Jubilee. So there are numerous, if in case you're wondering, there are numerous historical references outside the scriptures that suggest that this practice, in fact, was engaged in Israel. It continued right up to the destruction of the temple in the year, 68 to 70 AD, the Jewish-Roman War, and even afterwards. So it was practiced, at least in some places, even though we don't know quite how regularly it was practiced in Israel. I can tell you that the destruction of Jerusalem was viewed by the prophet Jeremiah. And as he saw that, one of the reasons for the destruction of Jerusalem previous to that, it had previously been destroyed, not just in the year 70 AD, but in the year 586 BC. And the reason he gave, you want to know what it was? Probably won't surprise you. What do you think it was? Shemitah. They didn't keep Shemitah. They didn't do what God had commanded them to do. So this is what Jeremiah said. He said, the problem with you is that now you're going to be exiled. The leaders of the people were taken out after the destruction of the of Israel at the hands of the Babylonians. They took all the leaders and moved into exile in Babylon. For how long? 70 years. You know why it was 70 years? Well, Jeremiah gave the answer to that. He said, well, from God's perspective, it's because you failed to keep Shemitah. You failed to keep the Sabbath year for 70 times. So that's how many years you're now going to spend in exile. And then, because God is gracious and merciful, steadfast in his love, he will bring you back to the land. That's called Shemitah. So when you look at all that, I think it can perhaps cause you to tremble just a little bit. All I can say to you is that God will get what he has coming. He will get what it's his, whether you give it willingly or whether he comes and takes it away. Do you see what I'm talking about? Tim and Donna have a theory they share with me. They say, well, you know, part of keeping covenant with God is tithing. You can either give it freely and willingly or God will take it away from you. How does he take it away? Car repairs. A furnace that doesn't work, a house that needs a new roof, a tree falls in your garage, he'll get what he wants, whether you want him to or not. So you can give it freely or willingly, or he'll take it from you, but God will not be mocked. God will get what God wants. Now, some of you are going to go, oh, come on, Jeff, please. You're not telling me that, are you? Well, let's go a little bit further and see what we think. The bottom line is this, that Israel's obedient observance of the Shemitah, or that Sabbath year, or their defiant rebellion, was to determine its destiny, its future, in the sight of God was lay according to the way that they honored the commandments of God. Either we keep the Sabbath year, either we keep the Sabbath day, or we reap the consequences of what we sow. Shemitah, you see, was supposed to touch every aspect and every area of the people's lives, the land and the people, the economy of the nation, how we treat one another as sisters and brothers, our neighbors. People weren't supposed to be poor. Some people weren't supposed to be incredibly rich at the expense of those who were poor and impoverished and destitute. And all of this, I want to say to you that it was meant to be a blessing, was Shemitah, a blessing. It was a reset for the poor and the less fortunate. Shemitah, what does it mean? Release, remission from debts, letting go, or a letting fall. But while it was meant to be a blessing, it could also become a curse. And it could bring judgment on the people if they failed to honor God. So what am I talking about? Well, has anybody read this book or seen it? Have you heard of it? The Harbinger? The Harbinger? It's by a rabbi by the name of Jonathan Cahn. He's a Messianic Jew. And so he knows his scriptures, the Hebrew Bible, better than most of us do. And somebody said this week that they actually Googled him, and you have to decide. But before you make your decision about what he says, let me explain a little bit. Some people think he's a kook. Other people think he may be prophetic. The name of the book is The Harbinger, and it's called The Ancient Mystery That Holds the Secret of America's Future. Want to hear some more? Here's the question that he raises. He says, what happens when a nation that once knew God and has once known God and his rest now drives him out of its public life? What happens when a nation that has known God and God's rest and blessing now drives them out of their public life? Or how about the individual, when we no longer keep covenant with God and honor the God of the Sabbath? Or the churches that do that? Well, if there's a failure to keep Shemitah, what that means is that this cancellation of debts, this Shemitah, if we fail to do it, it may be experienced in another way as judgment, because it's all about wiping out debt and credit. Are you getting the picture of where this might be headed? So what Khan says, he says this could come about and have the outward effect of economic collapse. You see, Israel abandoned both the Sabbath and the Shemitah, and they suffered for it. So instead of serving the God of rest, they served the idols of foreign nations, and they didn't know or experience or enter into the rest of God, the rest that he had for them. And that's why I said rest or arrest. So what happens is that as we only pursue economic gain and security, it becomes more and more elusive. The harder we go after that 7 days a week, the less we trust God and keep covenant, the more likely we are to incur the displeasure of God and to bring judgment on ourselves and perhaps economic collapse. Am I making sense here? We can invite blessing instead of judgment, or judgment instead of blessing. Now, what I want to say to you is that Jonathan Cahn is not like Hal Lindsey. Some of you may remember Hal Lindsey, who was a popular writer during the 1970s, that era, wrote a couple books. Perhaps the most popular was The Late Great Planet Earth. And he combed through the Bible, the book of Daniel and others, and the book of Revelation. And he would look at the imagery there and say, well, you know, those hornets mean this. So these are attack helicopters, and this is what's going to happen. And he read the scriptures like a calendar of coming events, the way a meteorologist would predict the weather, forecasting the weather for the next 6 or 7 days. He read it as if it were a coming calendar of events. I simply want to say to you, that's not what Rabbi Jonathan Cahn does. What he does is look for the clues to the underlying logic of history. And he asks that question, what's going on? Do you all understand beneath the scenes or behind them what's really going on? And I don't usually do this kind of thing and talk much about prophecy, but there's a lot of buzz about what he is saying. And I think it's important enough to bring before you if you haven't heard of Rabbi Cahn and what he has to say. So I just want to read to you what he says. A short quote. He says, the law of Shemitah was given to Israel, America was never under obligation to observe a Sabbath year. But Shemitah remains the sign of judgment on a nation that has driven God out of its life and replaced God with idols of ceaseless pursuit and gain. And then he goes on to make some connections. You can read the book for yourself and see what you think. But he goes on to make some connections between the crash of 2008, Lehman Brothers going down first, then Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac. And this happened exactly to the week 7 years after 9/11. The collapse of Lehman Brothers began on 9/11, exactly 7 years after the collapse of the Twin Towers, 9/11 in 2001. Do I need to tell you that according to the Israelite calendar, the Hebrew calendar, that this was a Shemitah year, or did you already figure that out? It's a year of release, a year of restoration, turning upside down and inside out. What should have been a blessing was experienced in our nation as a collapse. A tremendous economic recession experienced not only here, but all over the world. My father used to say when I was growing up, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Ooh, I never understood that one exactly. But I think the implication perhaps is apropos of what we're talking about. Just because we don't understand precisely what's happening in history doesn't mean that God isn't a player and isn't moving and isn't doing something. Would you like to know when the next Shemitah year begins? This week, starting September 25th. We're coming into that seventh year, the sabbatical year, and it will end in it'll end on the 13th of September in the year 2015. Is anything going to happen? Well, isn't that the question? Is anything going to happen? Well, all I can tell you is that 2008, there were a number of smaller Shemitahs the world over, but you put them all together and we had almost a global collapse. Also, it was a total inversion, the cancellation of debts. You saw what happened. Well, you can read Rabbi Kahn for yourself and decide what he has to say and if it makes sense to you. I think all he's offering us, and he would say this, he says, I am not a prophet. All I'm offering you is a parable and a pattern. There's a pattern here. Let those with ears to hear and eyes to see listen and perceive what God is doing in the world. Somebody point blank asked him, said, Rabbi, does this mean God is going to bring collapse this year between 2014 and 2015? He says, no, I can't say that. I don't know. He said, God is sovereign. It doesn't tell us what God is going to do, but he could. And there's a pattern here, and you can trace it far, far further back than 9/11/2001. All I can say is that it seems like it might be plausible. So, Jeff, what are you trying to say? Here we go. Here's my wrap up for you. What are you trying to say? Are we under judgment? Are we under judgment as a nation? Are you individually under judgment for your failure to keep the Sabbath, to honor God first on a weekly basis in your life, to gather publicly as the people of God? Are you under judgment? Is the nation under judgment? Is our church under judgment because we haven't been faithful in those ways? Well, let me explain this way and say to you, I don't think we really understand how biblical judgment works. Here's how biblical judgment works. It looks almost the same, does God's grace, as God's judgment. And that's the problem. Without help from above, you won't always know which you're experiencing, judgment or grace, the blessing or the curse. They almost look the same. They are two sides of the same coin. All I could tell you is that God is faithful to his promises, and God will get what God wants. If we don't offer it freely, he will take what he wants according to what he has commanded. So they often look the same. The blessing and the curse often look very similar to us. So how does that work in our experience? Well, I would say it this way. When we're under judgment, God looks at us, and this is how judgment works. He says, okay, John, whatever you want to do, big guy, go your way, do whatever you want. It's okay. That's what judgment looks like. It's when we step out from under God's protective care, under his protection. We say, yeah, I'll do whatever I want. Nobody can tell me what to do. We call it independence. We call it freedom. We call it choice or freedom of choice. You say, we think that's great. That's what the world says. This is awesome. I get to make up my own mind. And God just stands back and said, okay, John, do whatever you want. Have it your way. And so when that happens, we step out from under God's covenant, his protection. He would love to bless you, John, but when you step out from under his covering, then you're going to broker the best deal you can. You will reap whatever you sow. Whatever the consequences are of your own financial investing, your own mistakes, that's what you'll get. You reap what you sow. Basic biblical principle. You will not reap what God has for you. He wants to take care of you. He wants you to enter into his rest. He doesn't want you to work your tail off 7 days a week looking for peace, rest, and security when he already has that for you. All you will get is what you can earn and what you deserve. And maybe it works out or maybe it doesn't. Too bad. You see, when we're under judgment, God simply says, okay, Joe, go and do whatever you please. If that's what you want, okay, it's all right. We see it as freedom. The world says choice, and God says, you know what? That's judgment. Paul, if you're to read through the New Testament, has a word for it, and you're not going to like it. His word is wrath. He says when we do that, we're under the wrath of God. We call it freedom. God calls it judgment. You uncomfortable yet? Me too. So often we mistake freedom and think, this is tremendous. And God is saying, this is my wrath. What does he do? He simply lets you do, Jonathan, whatever you want to do. Aaron, whatever you want to do, he'll let you go and do. He will let you go because we insist on having things our way. God, this is what I'm going to do. Okay. And he will let you go because he is merciful. Now, let me say this. Shemitah, it was never intended to be anything other than a blessing. And it would have been if the people of Israel had kept covenant with God, if they had acted on what the principles that God presented to them, if they had kept covenant and trusted in what he had for them, they would have rested in his pleasure, with his blessing. But the minute they stepped out of that, they stepped into judgment. The minute they did that, the enemies began to become victorious and judgment came on the nation. There were crop failures and pestilence and other things, and destruction eventually came on the nation. So what does that mean for America? I don't know. But there's a pattern here, and it's a plausible pattern. And it's a biblical pattern. And have we not known God? What does this mean for us? Well, you see, God is merciful because he always wants to call us back into relationship. His burning heart's passion and desire is to be in a right relationship with us, not for us to experience the arrest of God, but to experience the rest that he has for us, the fullness of his blessing. So what does that mean? Well, you know, God has shown us something, and this is where it gets a little uncomfortable. God has shown us repeatedly what's wrong with our church. And people would say, oh my goodness, what is wrong with our church? Well, God gave us a revelation of that, and what he showed us is that it could be diagnosed biblically speaking. You might have a lot of prescriptions and ways of looking at it, but this is, I think, what, with revelation from above, how God sees it. Just a quick reading out of Isaiah 58. If, because of the Sabbath, you turn your foot from doing your own pleasure on my holy day and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable. And if you shall honor it, desisting from your own ways, from seeking your own pleasure and speaking your own word, then you will take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. What's God looking for? I think he wants to bless us. He wants us to be with him in right relationship. Shemitah. What does it mean for America? What does it mean for the church of God? What does it mean for you? I don't know what to do about the nation. I'm not even really sure what to do about the church. But I do think there is a step that every one of us could take. And it begins with asking ourselves before God, am I keeping covenant with the Lord? Do I honor the Sabbath? And it's not so much about honoring the day as it is about honoring the Lord of the Sabbath. For he loves us and he cares for us and he wants to provide for us. He wants to protect us. He does not want you to step out from under the umbrella of his protection where you are vulnerable, where you could get hurt, where you will try to negotiate for yourself the best deal that you can. But he knows if you do that, you will reap what you sow, and it might be far less than he wants to offer you. God's desire is that none should be poor or impoverished, that we should all be rich in the things of God. Is it possible? I'm just foolish enough to believe that God means what he says, that he doesn't say these things to hurt us, that he really does want us to understand what's going on in our world today. And while the world says, these are just economic trends. They come and go, ebb and flow, collapse and rise. New nations rise up, old nations fall. Really? And you think that behind all of it or beyond it, there isn't somebody who knows what's going on and who is guiding history toward a destination, a purpose, and a conclusion that belongs to him? You mean there isn't a God that doesn't want to express his love for us? I'm just foolish enough to take God at his word and to believe that he means what he says. What about you? I don't know what to do about the nation, but if it starts with me and every one of us is willing to be accountable and to keep covenant with God, maybe next year our banana harvest will be better than we know. Maybe our neighbors will be decimated, but what if? If you haven't tried it, all I can say is, you don't know. Now, let me give you one more illustration. Kind of interesting, as I was preparing for this week, God showed me that I had failed to keep Shemitah. Now, I didn't know I wasn't doing this, so here's God's illustration. You see, I have a garden, and I love to garden. I love to get my hands in the soil. And we moved into our house. It was just a simple illustration. We moved into our house in 2005. Our first harvest, I first planted then in 2006. And in the seventh year, which would have been a covenant year, a Shemitah year, I continued to plant. Well, God let me get away with that. But you know what happened 2 years ago? It rained and it rained and it rained. I have heavy clay soil. My garden drains. All the water comes right down into the garden, and I couldn't get into it. I got into a little stretch of it, about a third to a half, and was able to get a few meager crops out of it. Well, I got half of it. God was gracious. Well, this year, you know what it did again? The rains came, and I have that heavy clay soil. This time I got in the other half of the garden that I couldn't get in last year, but the half I got in last year was underwater, and I couldn't get in. So it lay fallow, and the ground rested. My ground, the very soil, took a vacation. And God showed me, see what I did with you? And I said, wait a minute, what? And he said, well, you didn't let the ground rest, so I took from you what you didn't give to me. And I said, you've got to be kidding. Really? Are you seriously? He said, let those with ears hear. Let those with eyes to see perceive. What does your heart tell you? I'm just foolish enough to believe that God actually means what he says. I never saw that before this week, and all of a sudden I'm looking up going, uh-oh. Shemitah, if we don't willingly and freely give, God will take what he wants. Are we willing to keep covenant with God and stay under his protection, rest in him, and receive the blessing that he has for us? I don't know about you, but don't you want that? Me too. Let's pray.